Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
Friends, family in Christ, thank you so much for tuning in. We are getting closer and closer to Christmas, although it is a season, not just one day, right? We don't know the exact day that Jesus was born, but we're just thankful that the Word became flesh, and we're so thankful for God's plan and how He orchestrated everything to perfection. And that includes lots of fulfilled prophecies, which should give us some great hope and encouragement as we go to God's Word. But thanks for tuning in. I'm so blessed to have my brother Gary Kaa back with us. It's been a while, but as you know, he's the former Europe and Middle East trade specialist for the Indiana State Government. And his website is simply Gary Kaa, KAH.org. His website is Hope for the World. Brother, so thankful for your time today. Good to see you.
Good to be with you, David, as always. Glad to see it.
Looking forward to catching up. Now, I know you've been very, very busy, and you and Audrey have been doing some traveling. You've been doing some speaking. I'll open it up right away by just asking your overall big picture view and your take on this past year, 2025. What maybe you're concerned about, what has flown under the radar, meaning that the church is maybe oblivious toward, and that might be a dozen things, but just share what's on your heart, and we'll just take it from there.
All right. Thanks for the opportunity. Well, you know, a lot is going on politically in our country right now. It seems like we're maybe more polarized than any time during my lifetime. Clearly, there's a huge divide in the country. And much of it seems to be along the lines of your big cities versus the rest of the country. Even in California, a huge difference between San Francisco and the Central Valley, for example. In New York State, huge difference between New York City and the area around Buffalo. Recently, of course, Zohran Mamdani was elected in New York City, and this was a much anticipated race between a Muslim with very strong communist leanings, a radical Muslim, you could say, because he is on record as having called for global jihad, and yet he got over 50% of the vote in New York and in New York City. And Mario Cuomo came in second with around 41%. So really, it wasn't even close. And that's concerning. I mean, this is the free enterprise capitalist hub for the United States. It's by far our most influential city. And so what does all of this mean? I'd say it has already emboldened the far left in other cities in the United States. A few weeks after Mamdani got elected, Seattle had an election, a far leftist one there as well. And days ago, Miami, Florida had a mayoral election, and the Democrat won by 19%. And Miami had a Republican mayor, a very popular one, for a number of years. And so right now your big cities are trending toward much more liberal politics. I'd say more than just liberal. These aren't your traditional Democrats who are being elected. I'm talking about the Democrats from the previous generation, like the 60s or 70s even. Most of these are coming from a far left standpoint with heavy Marxist leanings. I just finished an article, actually. It's not even published yet. It'll be going out soon. And just some interesting statistics. 66%, this according to a Gallup poll conducted in August, 66% of Democrats and 14% of Republicans now hold a positive view of socialism. And that's a huge shift from where those stats would have been, say, 20 or 25 years ago. And so what this means is that on any given day, if a large city across the country, any large city, if they can turn out the vote, if 90% of the Democrats get out and vote, they can probably win a mayoral race. The only two really major cities that are still held by Republican mayors at this time are Dallas and Oklahoma City. And Miami was one of those, but again, it just shifted. And so this is really what is shaping up. Your outlying areas, most of the counties in the United States are red. They've been leaning Republican, but the big cities overwhelmingly are going heavily toward the left. And so this matters for a number of different reasons. Again, most of your progressive left-leaning mayors now also carry with them a measure of anti-Semitism, also on board with the LGBTQ agenda, and overall have Marxist leanings. And so I pulled these statistics out. Anti-Jewish incidents in the United States have risen 893% over the past 10 years. And I don't have the stats in 2025 yet, but in 2024, there were 9,354 anti-Jewish incidents in the United States. And as far as Christians go, get this, in 2024, there were 415 acts of hostility on Christian churches in the United States. That's up 730% from 2018. So if Christians think, well, it's just the Jews that are coming under attack, wherever you have that taking place, attacks on Christianity are right there as well. And, you know, my family, you know this, my dad fled from the communists in Croatia and then from the Nazis in Austria when he was a young man. And my mother grew up under Hitler in Nazi Germany with a dad who was outspoken against him and even had to go into hiding for a period of time. So my parents, they went through this, you know, and in Nazi Germany in the beginning, a lot of Christians held back either out of fear or because they fell for Hitler. You know, he even quoted scripture here and there and quoted Martin Luther at times. And so not enough people took a stand as they needed to. And then eventually, once Hitler and his Nazi regime were fully in place, then he came after the Christian leaders and silenced them. And so this is a huge development in the United States that a lot of people didn't see coming. In response specifically to the vote in New York, which in my view was also a pretty strong anti-Semitic vote, so some interesting stats here. Based on the information we got, and this is unofficial, but just from people we know who live there, they said about one third of Jews in New York City actually voted for Mamdani. And I would contend that most of those were your non-religious Jews and those with socialist leanings. But about two-thirds of your Jews voted against Mamdani because they see the handwriting on the wall. In response to the results, Israel's diaspora minister, Amichai Chikli, I believe that's how it's pronounced, he tweeted, quote, "New York will never be the same again, especially not for its Jewish community. I invite the Jews of New York to seriously consider making their new home in the land of Israel," end quote. Also a very well-known blogger, Hebraic blogger by the name of Yeronim Yaakov, wrote, I quote him, "NYC will now have a pro-Hamas mayor, and government officials will now follow their leader in that sentiment. Those stuck in Mamdani's NYC will end up being fatalistic," end quote. In other words, get out while you can. And it'd be difficult to overemphasize that. I mean, again, this guy won in a landslide, and where he's coming from, you know, he's got a long track record of statements sharing what he really believes. And so in my article, I go on, I give information about OperationExodusUSA.org. That's an organization that I serve on the board of. And we actually have been helping for many years Jewish people to make Aliyah, that is to establish residency, permanent residency in Israel. So if any of our Jewish friends are listening, Or if you know of one, of a family or a Jewish individual who wants to make Aliyah to Israel, again, our website is OperationExodusUSA.org, and we have team members available to help with that. And we've been getting a lot of calls from the New York City area. In fact, so far this year, we've directly assisted over 800 Jews to make Aliyah to Israel. And it's an international organization. The same thing, David, is going on around the world. In New Zealand, Australia, the UK is just basically London is gone. We have friends over there. They said we've lost the city of London. It's become extremely anti-Semitic to the point where Jews fear for their lives. Same thing happening in parts of France. So this is something we're following closely. And again, in part because I'm concerned just about the persecution of Jews, but also this is going to affect Christians. And so if Christians sit back and don't take a stand now, you know, we're going to be affected by this directly as well. So this affects all of us.
And well, generally we have not taken a stand, and part of that might be due to ignorance, but so anti-Semitism is one thing, communism is another thing, but there seems to be this, you know, the red-green alliance, this axis that we hear about so often that Trevor Loudon and so many others speak about. It's strange bedfellows, but it's all to squelch Christianity, Judeo-Christian worldview. There's a saying, an expression, that they go after the Saturday people first and then the Sunday people. So the Jews first, Saturday worshipers, and then the Christians, the Sunday worshipers. We're not going to see peace. If they come over and get rid of the Jews, which Lord willing, we're going to fight back. But Gary, I wanted to ask you, I want to backtrack to what you were just explaining. A lot of people watching and listening, especially if they're over 40 or 50, are wondering, how did communism make a comeback in the United States of America? A lot of people are confused by that. And I can pinpoint either a combination of the silence of the church and biblical teachings, the lack of respect or understanding of our Constitution, and the ignorance and the indoctrination of the government-run schools and what kids are not being taught. They're not being taught true world history and what communism or socialism really is. Would you like to speak to either one of those things?
Yeah, it's been largely because the universities, the mass media, legacy media, which has had strong Marxist leanings for a long time, it hasn't come to the surface the way it has recently. You know, is lurking, but it's been there. But the university campuses, 90%, 93% of professors, according to one survey, have had strong far left leanings. And so we've been sending our young people indiscriminately into these universities, and they come out indoctrinated. And so your 35 and under crowd, especially, have very strong socialist leanings. And then also your World Council of Churches, your mainline churches who belong to that organization, the WCC, they've moved toward the left quite heavily. And if you look at where the funding is coming from for some of these groups that are promoting this far left agenda, you've got some of the Rockefeller foundations. You've got the George Soros foundations. You've got many of the same people heavily involved with the World Economic Forum, which is promoting a one world government agenda. And so it shouldn't really surprise us. And in fact, along with this move toward far leftism, well, before I move on, I want to talk a little bit about banking. But before I move into that, you know, Mikhail Gorbachev, he redefined terms. Communism, Marxism was repackaged. And he basically telegraphed us that. He said perestroika. Remember that term? That means a restructuring. And glasnost, it means basically a new worldview of peace, moving their agenda forward in the name of peace. So perestroika, glasnost, came on the scene in the 1990s, and everybody thought communism is dead. You know, the Iron Curtain fell. But what is amazing now is how things have shifted around. There are some countries that were former East Bloc nations that are now more free than the United States. One of them is Hungary. We were in Budapest about 3 years ago. I was amazed at the freedoms that people have there. And it seemed more entrepreneurial and free enterprise oriented than the United States. But in Russia itself, and especially in China, communist principles are alive and well. And if you follow the communist playbook, which surfaced back in the 1960s through some defectors from the former Soviet Union, at that time it's still called the Soviet Union, and you look at the steps in their playbook, I mean, we're just going right down the line. We're right where communists wanted the United States to be at this point in time. We really are. They largely control our education system. Many of the churches have gone far left. It's just some of the remnant evangelical Bible-believing churches that are towing the line, but not your mainline churches. And if you look at the divest movement regarding Israel, a lot of that's coming from your World Council of Churches group of mainline churches. So if I was president of the United States and I was a spiritually undiscerning person, and I'm getting all these letters from Christians from the mainline churches saying to take a much harder stand against Israel and expressing anti-Jewish sentiments, you know, it would seem awful confusing because you think, okay, these are Christians. I thought they, you know, were supportive of Israel, but I'm getting all these letters saying to stand with Hamas and the Palestinians and all this. I mean, things are so, everything's been turned on its head. And not that Israel is perfect by any stretch of the imagination. You know, they're facing some of the same things over there that we're facing. Their media has been penetrated to a degree by globalists. And so Israelis, they're fighting for their freedoms over there as well. It's very similar, almost a mirror image of what's happening in the United States. But still, right now, it's as if Israel can do nothing right. Everything that they're doing is wrong, you know, and so that's a big part of what I see that's going to move forward into 2026. I don't see this backing down at all. But along with this, David, is, you know, people, in order to control us, in order for globalists, the globalist Marxist movement to control us in the United States, along with trying to make inroads into how we think and seducing us in that way, they've got to be able to control the money. You know, without that, you can't really get people to do what you want them to do fully. And so some big, big changes are coming in banking. And so I just wrote a second article. These are going out in our winter issue, by the way. If people want to subscribe to our Hope for the World update, you can go online to GaryCod.org. And we really appreciate your subscriptions. That's how we're able to exist as an organization. But I call this article Big Changes in Banking. And approximately 130 countries have been working toward the introduction of central bank digital currencies for several years now behind the scenes. But nearly 50 of these countries are now ready, and they're planning to partly or fully implement their digital currency in 2026. So 50 of these 130 countries plan to do it this coming year. Here in the United States, the goal of international banks is to implement everything fully by the end of 2027, which that's just around the corner. And some of them will begin rolling it out making a few last minute adjustments in 2026. But the full rollout is expected in 2027. I hate to set dates because, you know, if there's enough pushback from people, which I hope there is, maybe this can be pushed back and delayed some. But unless people begin writing their congressmen, their senators, and also their state officials, this is right around the corner. It's going to come out pretty soon. And I have a good quote in this article here. Florida, under Governor Ron DeSantis, is leading the way in opposing CBDCs. He calls them, quote, a surveillance state in the making. And so Florida has passed a measure directing state agencies to refuse to accept central bank digital currencies. The state of Texas has passed similar legislation, and South Dakota, Tennessee, North Carolina and Alabama are considering similar bills to ban or restrict CBDCs at the state level. So a few states are out in front of this, but most of the states aren't. That's why it's important to write your state elected officials and also your congressional leaders from your state on this matter, because they want to, the goal ultimately is to completely eliminate cash. And it's this simple. If cash is completely gone, so are our freedoms with it. They'll make this look really good in the beginning. They always do. They'll say we'll be able to control organized crime. It'll be better for our economy because it gives the central banks some control, better control in that area. And again, they always make it sound good, but it's about a five-step process. And by the time you get to the fifth state, cash is completely gone. And I wanted to mention this in Europe, where they're a little bit further along. Full implementation of digital euros is slated for 2026, and tight restrictions are slated to accompany the new currency. Get this, only 3,000 digital euros will be available at any given time per customer. At least that's the current plan. So very tight regulation and restrictions on that. And eventually what they'll be able to do anywhere where CBDCs roll out, the big banks, the central banks will be able to know exactly how you spend all the money. And so they can give you an allowance, let's say of $3,000 at a time. And if you don't spend that money fast enough, they can force you to spend it quickly, more quickly, or take it away from you. Or if you spend it too fast, they can intervene on that as well. We're looking at complete individual control of how your money is spent. That's what Europe is going for. Of the European nations, Sweden is furthest along in becoming a completely cashless society. Only 1.2% of transactions in that country are currently non-digital. So they're almost to the point of being completely cashless. India as well is rolling out its digital currency. They've been doing some sampling. They've been doing it on a limited basis and just seeing how the public reacts to it. China is the furthest along. They're fully implementing their social credit system. And they know every move you make, and if you don't act according to how the government wants, they'll restrict you and penalize you.
So, Gary, let's talk about America. Did I hear you say this is going to come down to a state-by-state blocking central bank digital currency?
That's what they're trying to do. Florida believes that it's a major state. I mean, it's got over 20 million people, and Texas has about 30 million. So right there is 50 million. And if a few other states join on board and you suddenly have a third or half of the country state saying, we're not going to go along with this, then everything needs to be reexamined at the central bank level. And we're talking about the Federal Reserve and all your major Federal Reserve banks. There are about 8 or 10 of them that have the main interest in the Federal Reserve, banks like Chase and others, your biggest banks that are very influential in all of this. So I guess what I'm saying is if people make enough noise and it gets to the point where governors of states intervene and say, we're not going to go along with this, then unless there's a major collapse in the banking system, which could happen, the powers that be may try to bring that about to try to force people into the new system and say the old system is so broken, we have to do this or else you're going to live in poverty. I don't know how they'd, what they tell people, but we can't rule that out as a possibility, especially right before elections coming up next fall. So these people, they kind of have the noose around our necks, and they're doing what they can. Trump, to his credit, he's been promoting decentralized cryptocurrencies as a kind of alternative to this. And the president of El Salvador has actually really been pushing Bitcoin as an alternative to push back against the central bank digital currencies. The only problem is all transactions involving cryptocurrencies, they're all dependent on the internet, 100%. Who controls the internet? You know, so again, I come back to cash. Cash is the best thing. If we can keep cash on hand, even if it's not a majority of the transactions, but just having cash still as a viable option, that would make all the difference in the world. But if everything goes cashless, forget about your freedoms, because then you're completely dependent upon, you know, who is running a country. And the next time a far left progressive comes in as president, you know that's going to happen sooner or later, and then forget about our freedoms. So it's very important people take a stand on this now while they're able to do so.
Well, there's so much to keep up on or keep up with and to act on, not just be concerned, because we are not to worry. We trust God's sovereignty in all this. It's going to play out how he allows. But we have some freedoms in America that the most of the world do not have, maybe with the exception of Hungary. But Gary, just 2 minutes left. By the way, friends, we're in our last couple days of our fundraiser. If you are able to donate to Worldview Matters, and you'll get this nifty mug, stainless steel tumbler, we'd love to send that to you as a way of just saying thank you. $25 a month would be great, or a $200 gift, whatever you can do. We're thankful for your prayers. But if you are able to give, that'd be great. Go to worldviewmatters.tv. Gary, you are going to be coming up to Green Bay next May 1st and 2nd. We're blessed to have you come and speak at the Worldview Matters Conference. Imagine 6 months from now, actually 5 months, but a lot can happen just between now and next May. So a lot of the speakers, I'm saying, you know what, we're not sure all the topics, you know, what you're going to be talking about, because who knows where we're going to be. And this is one of those things to be concerned about. What's going to happen once they get access to our banks? You know, we're in a lot of trouble. But anyway, we're getting close to Christmas, a couple days until Christmas. Gary, just you've got a minute just to encourage our audience with whatever thoughts you'd like to share.
Right. Yeah. And I, like I said, I just wrapped up three articles that are going to be out in our winter issue, and people can subscribe to that. But I'll just share the last few words I had in the one article. I said, we must never allow fear or intimidation to prevent us from boldly speaking the truth. We must continue to stand firm for Jesus and do all the good that we can while we can. So don't stop being salt and light, as we are Christ's ambassadors in this broken world, whose people, regardless of their background, desperately need salvation. So I just close with those words of hope. I know there's a lot of bad stuff going on in the world, but we as Christians, we know where we stand with the Lord, that he has saved us, that our eternity is secure. But in the meantime, we're to be his representatives in this world. And if we're not speaking out in his light, who will be? You know, so keep fighting the good fight.
Brother, thank you. Friends, you can go to GaryKah.com. Or is it .org?
.org. GaryKah.org.
All right, brother. Lord willing, we'll do this again. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We'll see you again.
Friends, you as well.
Thank you so much for sharing the podcast and for your support. God bless you. And as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.